And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
To the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio with you till 3. Better late than never. With plenty to do over the next few hours coming up, the Warriors punch their ticket back to the NBA Finals. We'll look ahead to the potential matchup in said NBA Finals. And another great run here for Steph Curry and what it means for him. Plus, is Baker Mayfield to the Panthers inevitable at this point? The Gamecocks get their first couple of kickoff times announced. How sustainable is name, image, and likeness? How excited are we for the latest sequel all these years later? With Top Gun coming out, plus I will turn it into a little bit of a sports conversation. Which NFL teams have had the best and worst off seasons? Do we believe the Tom Brady hole-in-one? We got plenty to get to over the rest of the afternoon with you till 3 on this Friday as we get ready for a holiday weekend. And you can join the conversation throughout the afternoon. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. You can always text the show 843-608-1734. Get to us online. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. Well, you can always email the show as well, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or you can join the conversation on the phones, 843-721-9500. With you till 3 on this Friday. On the road, still in Greenville, getting ready for the Southern Conference Baseball Tournament with the Citadel getting back in action tonight. We'll have that for you on our sister station. Trent's on the steel wheels. Trent, what's going on? How are you?
Luke, I'm doing well, sir. Doing well on this beautiful Friday. A little rainy here in the low country right now. Hope the weather gets a little nicer for the weekend, this Memorial Day weekend. But I'm feeling good. Great night of basketball last night, Luke. Glad to be in studio here, sir. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, likewise. Now, appreciate, Bart and Han holding things down for a little while there until we got everything up and running.
That's right.
It's been quite the interesting about 24 hours here in the upstate. Now, I'm in Greenville, right, doing the show remotely, getting ready for the Southern Conference Baseball Tournament. We had quite the storm yesterday. It was a good idea by the Southern Conference to preemptively move all of those games yesterday to Wednesday and not worry about playing any baseball yesterday, and I understand why. It was raining all day, thunder, lightning for most of the day, and last night, first time ever, I lost power in a hotel room. Never happened. And it happened a couple of times. It happened right around dinner time last night and then quickly came back. And then it happened overnight as well, about 2 a.m. The power went out and did not come back. I fell asleep. We still didn't have power. So long story short, we've had some technical issues over here at the hotel. Everything's back up and running. But it took us a little while to get the equipment equipped today to get on the air. So, hey, when you do shows from the road, you never know what could happen. But good to be up and running and with you the rest of the way here till 3 o'clock on a Friday. Some of the outlets aren't working. I got all sorts of different things plugged in. I'm wondering why my Apple Watch wasn't charged. I'm moving things around. So we figured it out. We're good to go. Let me start with this. Now, even though the power, you know, we lost power for a little bit here. The TV cut out for a little while. Fortunately, it came back in time for me to watch the Warriors win last night, advance to the NBA Finals for the sixth time in the last 8 years. Now, what's interesting about Golden State is that they're unique, right, and they're different. Because the NBA has always been a stars league, and it's about the stars dominating the basketball. It's all about the stars. At the end of the game, you want the basketball in the stars' hands, a lot like the Mavericks and Luka Doncic, right? The ball is always in Luka's hands. He's the star. He doesn't have enough help around him. But as long as you have that star, you can get to at least the conference finals. There's a ceiling. There's a cap to your success, but you'll go a pretty far way. You have the star. That's the most important part. And Golden State, they have the stars. But what's unique is that they don't have anybody in the top 10 in the league in usage rate. usage rate is, in layman's terms, right, how often the guy has the ball in his hands. And most guys in the NBA, a Luka Doncic, right, most of the stars, they'll be top 10 or they'll be high up on the list because they always have the ball in their hands. The offense runs through them. The team runs through them. And Steph Curry is a guard who usually will bring the ball up the floor. Right? He's considered now a point guard just because the ball is usually in his hands. But he's not top 10 in usage rate. What's so great about Golden State is that they play well as a team. And they have a superstar in Steph Curry that still allows them to play as a team. I think the best quality of the Golden State Warriors is the fact that they have a star who's unselfish. Because selfishness is one of maybe the worst traits you can have. Right? Not just for an athlete. I'm talking in general, in your own life. Nobody likes a selfish person. You don't get along with selfish people. And sports are probably no different. Consider who the greatest quarterback of all time is, Tom Brady. And he has never taken as much money as he could. He's never been the highest paid quarterback. Now, we could get into the whole, yeah, right, he's got a rich wife who actually makes more money, right? He hasn't had to. Now, he wasn't always married to Giselle. Even before that, he was taking team-friendly deals. But Tom Brady never took as much as he could, at least not until he became a broadcaster or will become a broadcaster. Then you look at somebody like an Aaron Rodgers gets the big contract, Devontae Adams has to leave. And he's not the only one. There's countless quarterbacks that have done it over the years. The quarterbacks always want to be the highest paid. Whichever quarterback signs the next contract wants to make sure it's higher than anybody else. Matt Ryan went through it with the Falcons, Kirk Cousins, all these guys. You could even argue that the Chiefs had to let Tyreek Hill go in part because of the big contract they gave to Patrick Mahomes. Now, I probably still wouldn't give Tyreek Hill the money he was asking for, but I also don't think it was really much of an option for the Chiefs anyways. They couldn't afford to either. But Tom Brady has, well, now 7 Super Bowls while never being the highest paid quarterback. And you would think others would take note, would notice, would care, would see, right? Sports are such a copycat league. You see what Tom Brady's doing over there, you figure maybe you need to do the same or should do the same to have similar success. Because no quarterback has ever won a Super Bowl and making more than 15% of the salary cap. We have the information. The quarterbacks that try to take as much money as they can and hurt the roster elsewhere, they don't win. But the quarterback who was always willing to take less, never needed to be the highest paid guy, was willing to try to help the team in other areas, he's won the most. He's the greatest of all time. And in the NBA, the best dynasty of the last 25 years, the Golden State Warriors, now exists or has existed because of an unselfish star. That usage rate stat I mentioned earlier, how nobody on the Warriors are in the top 10. Yeah, well, nobody in the top 10 are still playing. They've all been eliminated. They're not going to reach the NBA Finals. In fact, historically, if you look at the 20 highest usage rates, so the 20 guys who would have the ball in their hands most often, none of those 20 ever won an NBA Finals. Only one ever reached the NBA Finals. That was Allen Iverson, and he didn't win. Right? It's simple. The blueprint is out there, and still people ignore it. Or they don't care, or they're not interested, or maybe they care more about their own stats or just having the ball in their hands or being the leader of the team than actually winning. And that's what's so impressive, so great about Steph Curry. That as great of a player as he is, he's always seemingly put the team ahead of himself. The Warriors play a style that others don't. They use all 5 guys. They play together. They move the ball. They move great without the basketball. They're the best in the league playing without the ball in their hands. And you have Draymond Green, who's fine with just being a role player. Right? He doesn't have to shoot a ton. He's fine if he scores 6 points a night. He'll do the dirty work. He'll get the rebounds. He'll play defense. He'll get physical with the other team's star. He'll make some passes. He doesn't have to score. He's okay with it. And then you have 2 stars that are fine with playing within the system. Steph Curry is a star. He has one of the highest-selling jerseys in the league. He is the best shooter we've ever had in the league. The Warriors had, I think it was the 6th most watched, the 6th highest watched games this year. They're the most watched team. You have one of the highest-selling jerseys. And by the way, Golden State also has the most expensive ticket in the NBA. Average ticket to get into a Warriors game this year was $260, more than any other team in the league. Why? Because people want to see him. They're willing to spend more to go see Curry and the Warriors. They're willing to spend to buy his jersey. People are making sure to be at the TV to watch his games. And when you total that all up, it'd be easy for somebody. You could understand somebody in his spot, right, being a little arrogant, having a big ego, being a little full of themselves, becoming a selfish player, thinking they come to see me. They're wearing my jerseys. They're tuning in to watch me and my 3-point shooting. and to always have the ball in his hands, to be one of those high usage rate guys, to make sure the team always runs through him. It'd be easy for somebody to become arrogant or selfish in that spot, to have the inflated ego, but neither Steph Curry or even Klay Thompson are. Now, Klay's not quite as big of a star as Steph Curry, but when you see him last night play as well as he did in a big game and knock down some of those big shots, and that's nothing new. Right, Klay is a second, third tier, wherever you want to put him, a different kind of star. And they're the Splash Brothers, and they have the cool nickname, and you know, he's a similar style to Curry, both good three-point shooters. People want to see that. It's exciting. Both of those guys could have real egos that cause problems. They don't. Neither are arrogant or selfish. They're the ultimate team players. And what's interesting is both of them are kids of NBA players, right? Both their fathers played in the NBA. Both guys were under-recruited coming out of high school. Curry goes to Davidson. Klay goes to Washington State. And then both in college played for coaches that taught motion offenses, where the motion offense is more about the team than the star. And it teaches you to be good without the ball in your hands. And so these guys came up from that interesting background that I guess molded them to be the perfect fit for this style. And then they just so happened to wind up together in Golden State, throw in Draymond Green, who's happy to do all the other things. And it's just like this perfect fit. It's rare to have two stars. And you could say three if you want. Draymond Green, right? If you want to call all three stars. Draymond Green, at this point in his career, isn't so much a star, but he's a big name, big personality. He's had a lot of success, and he's been part, a very important part, of this dynastic run for the Warriors over the past 8 years. So if you want to include all three and say they're three stars on their team, none of them actually have to be the star. They're fine if Jordan Poole's the leading scorer, or Andrew Wiggins goes off for 20, or Looney scores a few buckets, or whoever you want. Pick your poison. You know, like the Lakers dynasty ended because Kobe and Shaq couldn't get along. They both wanted to be the star. They wanted the credit. Their egos clashed. They could have accomplished a lot more. They could have been dominant for as long as they wanted. But they broke up that team after winning those three championships because they just couldn't do it anymore. You could even say kind of the Bulls dynasty of the 90s, where you had the the GM battling with Phil Jackson or Jordan, and they all wanted their share of credit. And Scottie Pippen eventually wanted to be more of a star. He wanted to have more of a focal point of the team. And everybody went their own way. After that final championship in 98, right, it's part of the reason why Jordan retired. Phil Jackson left. Scottie Pippen left. They broke up the team. Everybody went off and did their own thing, and they thought, you know, this was fun, but we could go do something else. Now, granted, that was after winning six championships in 8 years, so they held it together plenty long enough. And I think it's also what made Scottie Pippen great with his time in Jordan, that he was fine with being the Robin, right, for the most part, at least when he was playing with Jordan. When Jordan went to go play baseball, Pippen wanted to be the new Jordan. And we all know the story. Phil Jackson draws up the play for Tony Kukoc. Scottie Pippen doesn't want to go into the game because the last-second shot isn't for him. When Jordan retired that second time in 98, Pippen took a big contract to try to go be a star on another team. But when he and Jordan were actually playing together, winning championships in the 90s, it worked because he was willing to let Jordan be the star and have the ball and take most of the shots, and Scottie would do the other things, and he would be so good at filling those other roles. And that's a big reason why they were able to win so many championships throughout the 90s. But the greatest quarterback of all time got there in part because of how unselfish he was. Could have always gotten paid more. Didn't care. Wanted to make sure the team was in a better position. He was more about the team than himself. And the greatest dynasty in 25 years in the NBA has gotten there because of the same idea. They're more about the team than themselves. They're unselfish. Steph Curry could score 15 points. He doesn't care. He could be the third leading scorer on the team as long as they win. Steph Curry, Tom Brady, they realize, hey, a better team will help me. A better team will make me better. Just like for you, like if things function better at your job, it makes your life easier instead of having to be the star getting all of the attention. Put the ego aside and realize, actually, if I help those around me, it's going to come back and help me too. It's going to make it easier on me. We're going to have a better company overall, as opposed to making sure that you look really good and the company not so much, that you star above everybody else. These guys realize, if I do something to help the team, I'm going to reap those benefits. I'm part of the team. You could even say Steph Curry letting Kevin Durant come in and kind of steal the show. Curry didn't need Durant. They won a championship before Durant. They won the most games in an NBA season before Kevin Durant. Curry was the star. He didn't need Kevin Durant to come in and bail him out or even take over. He was fine with it. Took somewhat of a backseat, Right, a little bit. He moved over to the passenger seat a little bit. That was fine. Then Durant left. Now Curry's going back to the championship with help from the other guys around him, like Jordan Poole and all the. He doesn't care. Right, the Warriors didn't need Durant. They're already champions. Curry could have said, no, this is my team. Right, you're not coming in to my dojo to take over. This is my squad. But instead, he was happy to have Durant come in. They went a couple of more. Not enough stars are willing to do these things. They want it to be about themselves. Tom Brady has been unselfish in some of the most important areas that has allowed the team to flourish, turning him into the greatest of all time. Steph Curry, incredibly unselfish, allowing the team to flourish, turning him into one of the all-time greats as well. And others don't seem to realize it. Highest usage rates, highest paid quarterbacks, they're not the ones winning. But a couple of the greats, and there's very few, that's why they're unique, they're rare, but you look at Brady, you look at Steph Curry, a big reason why they've gotten here, obviously they're incredibly talented. That's the most important part. They're really good at what they do. But part of the reason why they've been able to have so much success compared to others is at least in part because of their selflessness, because of their ability to help try to put the team ahead of them, knowing that they're going to benefit from that as well. Coming up a little bit later on this afternoon, we will talk about the NBA Finals, looking ahead. What would be the more interesting matchup for the Warriors? Could we actually get an interesting NBA Finals? You know, last night got a little interesting in the fourth quarter, but it was another one of those, it was a 25-point game at halftime. Another one of those NBA playoff games that was over almost as soon as it started. And the NHL playoffs, the NHL is always trying to battle for its spot. I tell you what, I don't think as many people are paying attention to the NHL playoffs as the NBA playoffs, even with all these blowouts. But boy, are the NHL playoffs putting on a show and certainly outdoing the NBA. Right, this is if the NHL could ever try to make some sort of move in the market, this is they're trying. They're doing their job, giving us some great games. Last night, a couple of another great games. Edmonton wins in overtime. The NBA, meanwhile, giving us a bunch of snoozers, bunch of blowouts, most blowouts in a postseason in 20 years. Hopefully the NBA Finals will be good. We'll look at that later on this afternoon. But we come back now that we're up and running. Is Baker Mayfield to the Carolina Panthers still just inevitable? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Ben Lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Is Baker Mayfield to the Panthers still inevitable? We'll get to that on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Yesterday, towards the end of the show yesterday, the very end, in fact, was talking about Sam Darnold, the Carolina Panthers, compared him to Trevor Lawrence. You know, Sam Darnold had some quotes this week that he's kind of getting mocked for, talking about how he believes he could still be a guy and, you know, could still be a great quarterback and be the guy for the Panthers. And I always say fit is so important. And maybe Ben McAdoo is the right guy for Sam Darnold. Like, I think Doug Peterson could certainly be more beneficial to Trevor Lawrence than Urban Meyer was. And friend of the show, Nate Tice, who writes for The Athletic, played quarterback in college, put out an article looking at the second-year quarterbacks this year, and he does expect a big step forward for Trevor Lawrence, who was not good a year ago. So I think Darnold and Trevor Lawrence are similar in the sense that they're both still trying to prove themselves at the NFL level. Obviously, for Trevor Lawrence, it's only been a year. Sam Darnold, it's been much longer. It's been multiple teams, multiple coaches, but maybe that's part of the problem. Urban Meyer is in over his head. Joe Brady seemingly in over his head. Adam Gase was in over his head. These are two guys, Darnold longer than Lawrence, that are still looking or waiting for that right fit, that right coach to get the most out of him. And maybe it's McAdoo. Right? McAdoo has a decent track record, working with Eli Manning, doing a good job in New York when he was calling the plays. Not so much as a head coach, but that's not his role here. He's just the coordinator calling plays. He doesn't have to be the head coach. And then also, you know, working with Rodgers probably can't hurt. We'll see if McAdoo coming in helps Sam Darnold. But we also got this report. Jonathan Alexander of the Charlotte Observer put out that, you know, we knew on draft night the Panthers and the Browns are pretty close to pulling off a deal for Baker Mayfield, and it came down to finances. Well, Alexander reported this week that the difference was that the Panthers wanted the Browns to pay about $14 million of the Mayfield contract. Therefore, Carolina would then pay about $5 million to bring him in for a year, which certainly seems like a bit of a bargain. And the Browns said no, right? The Browns are looking for somebody to pay the majority of that contract, which seems a little far-fetched, seems a little pie in the sky, because Cleveland really doesn't have any leverage in this situation. They're looking to get rid of Baker. And if Deshaun Watson is suspended, well, then maybe you need Baker a little bit more if you're Cleveland. But we may have already passed that, right? That bridge may have been already burnt. You have Jacoby Brissett on the roster. He may be the guy that steps in. I don't know if Baker would ever be willing to throw on a Browns uniform again. So you have a guy that you're just trying to get rid of, right? That doesn't, he's not bringing you anything. You're either going to cut him or you got to trade him. You got to get rid of him. And we talked about on the show a couple of weeks ago where the Panthers seem like one of the very few teams that would actually be a potential suitor, that would actually be interested. When we get to that point when Cleveland says, okay, we got to move this guy, and they pick up that phone and they try to call around, right? Who are they calling? Who are the first calls? I don't think Seattle should be interested. At this point, Seattle should go in on, you know, just tanking this year and getting a quarterback in next year's draft. And most other teams seem to already be set, or believe they are, at that quarterback position for the now or the future. Carolina is one of the few that still needs some help right now, like today, needs to upgrade the quarterback position. So we got that story this week that, you know, it's the difference of some millions of dollars keeping that trade from occurring. Well, what about when we get to the point when push comes to shove and the Browns do have to move him? And the Browns realize, all right, we're just going to have to, you know, suck up some of this money. I've heard it compared to like a yard sale. You show up at a yard sale at the very end, you're going to get some items for a lot cheaper than you would have if you went earlier. Because now they didn't sell those, and it's either they take it back inside, put it on the sidewalk for free, or give it to this person offering you, you know, a quarter of what you were hoping to get for that item earlier in the morning. Same thing with Cleveland. By the time we get to the start of the season, like, what are you going to do? You're going to keep this guy on the roster as your third quarterback? He's unhappy. He doesn't want to be there. He probably won't even show up to the start of the season. And you're going to pay him 19. You might as well just get rid of him. Get something for him. Or even if the Panthers are willing to pay a few million, right, just a little bit. That's better than you paying the full 19. If you get anything for him at that point, it's a benefit. And when you go to make that move and say, okay, right, Carolina, you were willing to pay $5 million. We've come around. We'll do that. That's obviously our best option. It's our only offer on the table. Right? It's a lot like if you're on the dating apps nowadays, kids of a certain age, and maybe you match with somebody on one of those dating apps, and you go out for a date, and it doesn't click that first time. And then you're still making your rounds in the dating app, and you're trying to find that perfect somebody. And you fast forward like 3 months and you still haven't found anybody. Maybe you're a little lonely, maybe a little desperate, I don't know. And you're scrolling through and you see like, oh yeah, that person, we went out on a date 3 months ago, didn't quite work. But you know what? You realized in the 3 months since, maybe they weren't so bad. There's been no better options in the 3 months since. Maybe that was the best option out there over the past 3 months. And you reach out to that person again and maybe you try to strike up the relationship once more. You try to get together again, see if it's different, see if it's better a second time around. And a lot of times it can be because, well, maybe your perspective just simply changed. When you first went out on a date with that person, maybe early on in your dating adventure, you thought, no. There's better out there. We don't need to settle for the Panthers taking Baker Mayfield and us paying $14 million. And then as you fast forward closer to the season, you realize, like, well, actually, wait a minute. Maybe that is the best option. Maybe there isn't much else out here. Maybe that wasn't so bad. Let me give that person a call. All right, we're still stuck with Baker. Or I'm still home alone, lonely, and single. Let me fire up the whatever. Let me text that person, whatever you want to do, form of communication, and see if they're still available, if we could get back together. If the Browns, or maybe more appropriately, when the Browns move Baker Mayfield, because it seems like they're going to have to. I don't think you want to start the year with him on the roster. When they move Baker Mayfield, how many other teams would be willing to still have that conversation with Cleveland, especially the closer we get to the season? Now, look, you can't predict quarterback injuries, and there's usually one or two, unfortunately. So the play for Cleveland may be to hold on to Baker as long as they can, and as bad as it sounds, you hope for an injury. Like when the Eagles drafted Carson Wentz, still had Sam Bradford on the roster, and then a week before the start of the season, Teddy Bridgewater gets injured, and they trade Bradford to the Vikings for some good draft picks. And it just worked out. It lucked out for Philadelphia. Like, that's what they needed. another team desperate at the start of the year for a quarterback all of a sudden. That's what Cleveland would need. It sounds terrible. You never want to root for an injury, but if you're the Browns, right, if somebody goes down in training camp, in a preseason game, or just practice, and now that team's desperate, they just lost their starting quarterback weeks before the season, maybe that's your best option. If you want to try to play the long game and hold out that something better could come down that road. But eventually we may reach August. I don't know when that turning point is. July, August, September. And the Browns look around and say, like, all right, well, we might as well just get rid of this guy. Oh, remember the Panthers were offering $5 million? That doesn't seem so bad. It just seems like if Baker gets moved, the best option still is Carolina. Most other teams, outside of some sort of injury, seem like they're set for the time being at the quarterback spot. And if it simply just came down to the money, I think eventually that's something that can get worked out. If you wait out Cleveland long enough, they may come back around and realize that actually is one of the better options we've had, one of the better offers we've gotten in the last couple months. In fact, in this case, it may be the only offer, unless there's some sort of injury this summer. I think there's still a pretty good chance that Baker Mayfield winds up in Carolina this year. And maybe it's more about Baker and Ben McAdoo than Sam Darnold and Ben McAdoo as a fit in Carolina. When we come back, which NFL teams have had the best and worst off seasons so far? It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Which NFL teams got better and worse this offseason? It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Getting ready for the Citadel, getting back underway tonight. By the way, I was talking to somebody about that. Right, the game's scheduled for 7:30. They said to me, I doubt they'll play before 9. So it could be a long night here in Greenville tonight as we get ready for Citadel baseball. Whenever they get underway, we'll have it for you on our sister station with the Southern Conference Tournament starting back up today and the Bulldogs playing for their season this evening. Which NFL teams have had the best and worst off seasons? Which teams have gotten better and have gotten worse these last few months? Now, Bill Barnwell for ESPN.com was putting together his rankings. And he started out by putting together the bottom half of the league. And then next week, he'll do the top half, which theoretically will be the best. He put out the worst. By the way, the Carolina Panthers on his list are ranked 18th in terms of best. Therefore, that would make them, what, 14th worst? Right, on a scale of 1 to 32, 1 being the best, the Panthers had the 18th best offseason. He also put the Falcons 31st, meaning they had the second worst offseason, only better than Seattle. For me, you know, we could go through all 32 teams if we wanted. Like the Texans, you would say probably didn't have a great offseason, but they were already a bad team. I want to focus more on the teams where it's going to be a more impactful offseason. Did the Falcons have a good offseason? No, probably not. But they already had a losing record last year. They'll have a losing record this year. It wasn't a huge deal. They were a bad team that got worse. Texans, bad team that got worse. I think the Bears, bad team that got worse. I did not like what they did this offseason. But I want to focus more on some of the teams that were in the playoff running a year ago that took a step back. And it doesn't mean they're going to be bad this year or they're not going to make the playoffs. But I think when I think of the teams that, you know, had maybe the worst offseason, I agree with Barnwell, who put Seattle as the worst. I don't know if I would put them at the worst, but they would certainly be on my list. Seattle, Arizona, Dallas, Green Bay are four that immediately jump to mind as having bad offseasons. Right, the Packers losing Devontae Adams and not doing much else. The Cowboys had a tough offseason. You want to talk about, you know, we opened the show today, once we got on the air, opened the show talking about quarterbacks taking as much money as they can to the detriment of the team. Meanwhile, Tom Brady always takes less money and is the greatest quarterback of all time. And Dak Prescott took a lot of money. Ezekiel Elliott, also guilty here for Dallas, took a lot of money. And because of that, the Cowboys had to shed some guys. And Amari Cooper is gone, right? And they had to get rid of Collins on the offensive line, and they had to get rid of a couple of defensive guys. And they really didn't bring anybody in, at least not in terms of free agency. So the Cowboys, I think, have gotten worse. There was already questions about how last season ended, and I think they took a step back in the offseason. The Cardinals, well, you had Hopkins get suspended. I thought you were on the wrong side of a trade with Hollywood Brown. And you have an unhappy quarterback throwing a temper tantrum. And you have more drama because he gave an extension to the coach and GM, not the quarterback. That didn't go over well. The Cardinals, after making the playoffs last year for the first time with this combination of coach and quarterback, I think they had a bad offseason. And I'll also say, of course, Seattle, right? When you go from having Russell Wilson and being a perennial winning team to then now losing Russell Wilson, having very little hope, looking forward to Geno Smith and Drew Lock and probably a year of not many wins, hoping that you get your quarterback of the future in next year's draft. Anytime you lose a franchise quarterback like that, of course you're going to be on the losing side. Of course you're going to have one of the worst offseasons. Now, in terms of teams that I think really did a great job this offseason, and it doesn't mean that suddenly they're going to contend, but at least they seem to make some moves to improve their team and move in the right direction. And five came to mind in the Dolphins, Raiders, Eagles, Jets, and the Broncos. The Broncos are the opposite. They're the flip side of the Seahawks. Anytime you lose a franchise quarterback, that's a tough offseason. That was Seattle. Anytime you gain a franchise quarterback, that's a great offseason. That's Denver. They believe they answered the biggest question for a football team by bringing in Russell Wilson. Then the Jets. I don't think the Jets are going to be all that good this year. There's a little hype. There's some hype building for the Jets. I see some people talking about New York could be the surprise team in the AFC. I don't think so. I think they'll still be bad. I think they'll probably still be in last place because I don't think they have the quarterback. But they did make a lot of good moves this offseason to bolster the other pieces of the team. The Eagles, to bring in A.J. Brown and to try to help Jalen Hurts after they were a playoff team a year ago. And they're similar to the Dolphins and maybe even the Jets. Right? The Dolphins are on my list. I thought the Dolphins had a really good offseason. You improve all the other areas of the team. If you can't improve the quarterback position, well, let's improve the surrounding parts to try to bolster that quarterback position. And the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Eagles all tried to do so. Now, if their quarterbacks are going to be good enough this year, that's another question. But the moves they made to bolster the roster I thought were all good, and those were teams that made a good step in the right direction. And the last team I'll highlight would be the Raiders, because you brought in Devontae Adams. You brought in Josh McDaniels, who we don't know if it's going to work, but it's exciting. And you also brought in, you know, a Chandler Jones on defense as well. And they did a few other things, too, in a very tough division after making the playoffs last year. And in the division that is the best in the NFL, we're still hopeful about what the Raiders can accomplish because of some of the pieces they brought in. Just kind of quick twitch teams I was thinking of. Right, the five teams that I would think of that did a really good job in taking a step forward this offseason. The Dolphins, Raiders, Eagles, Jets, Broncos. And the teams that maybe moved in the wrong direction this offseason. Seattle, Arizona, Dallas, Green Bay. And then if you want to throw Chicago in there just to give us five on each side, that's fine as well. I'll continue to lament the moves the Bears made with the coaching staff, and they didn't do much with the active roster to help out their young quarterback either. The Jaguars seem to make some moves that could help Trevor Lawrence. The Bears seem to do the opposite, make some moves that could only make it harder on their young quarterback. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. We'll touch on the Gamecocks got some of the kickoff times announced for their early season games. And I know there's some unhappy fans. We'll talk about that coming up. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Mara Midday Show.
Plans for the night, and then you stop and say, all right.
Wrapping up hour one on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We got the announcement of some of the kickoff times. You know, I get why they do it, but as a fan, it's not fan-friendly in college football. How you have to wait. You got to give it whatever it is, like 10 days in advance to find out the kickoff time. And for the first couple of games, they announced the kickoff times for September earlier this week. And for the Gamecocks, their first game of the year against Georgia State will be a night game. And then noon kickoffs at Arkansas and Georgia on September 10th and 17th. And I saw a lot of fans unhappy, especially with the Georgia game, because that's a home game. And I get it, right? For tailgating purposes, the noon kickoff is probably the opposite of ideal. You'd like a nice night game. You don't have to get there too early. You have the whole day to have a good time, get a little sauced up, and you go in there, and then it's at night. And we always, you know, right, there's a reason why we play the playoff games at night in all sports. Because a night is the night games, the prime time, that's supposed to be the bigger window. That's a bigger deal. You put the bigger games there. But a couple of things when it comes to the Gamecocks and these kickoff times, and not to look too much into it. But number one, maybe it speaks to the expectations for the Gamecocks. Now, look, they're already a two-touchdown underdog against Georgia. We do have that number. We don't have the point spread on all games, but we do have the point spread. They're at home a two-touchdown underdog to Georgia. So I haven't looked at the rest of the schedule that day. Right, but let's not act like that's the game of the week. I mean, it may end up being it, but on paper, not so much. And Arkansas, that's a more intriguing game, but Arkansas will be a touchdown favorite as well at home. So it's a little bit of a, you know, that as exciting of an offseason as it's been for the Gamecocks. I wouldn't call it a reality check, but just the fact that still, right, maybe a little work to be done or to prove themselves. We're early in the season against Arkansas and Georgia. Those games are noon to kickoffs because, you know, we don't know truly on paper how good the games will be or in terms of the Gamecocks, how well they can match up if they're already on a Georgia level. But I'll also say this. Here's the saving grace. Here's the positive spin cycle on these noon kickoffs. Not only that you could get out of there and watch the top games that night, but Fox Sports, they made their big game that noon kickoff, and a lot of people mock them, thinking, why are you putting the big game at noon instead of even a 3:30 or at night? And it worked out. The ratings are actually up for Fox, and their most watched window is noon. So maybe the noon kickoff for a team or a respect factor isn't so bad. Maybe it's not so great for tailgating, but not so bad for a window to play in for a team. Hour two next.